Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
I'm very privileged to have Duff Conacher on the line. He's an internationally recognized leader in the area of democratic reform and government accountability, graduate of University of Toronto Faculty of Law. He has a long-standing interest in democratic processes and corporate responsibility issues. And he was the main founder of Democracy Watch. Hey, Duff, welcome to the show.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Now, for our Canadian and U.S. listeners who don't really know the details of the SNC-Lavalin affair, can you briefly catch up to listeners on what is a deferred prosecution agreement?
Sure. Well, what a deferred prosecution agreement is, something that's developed over the last decade or so, since the World Bank started in an anti-corruption effort, banning big companies from bidding on World Bank-funded projects, mainly in the developing world, if they were convicted of bribery. So what countries started doing, the U.S. and Britain earlier than Canada, was allowing the prosecutions of companies to be deferred, which means they negotiate a settlement with the company and the company agrees to clean things up, has to cooperate with the prosecution of executives or employees that might have been involved in bribery, and the company gets essentially let off the hook if they meet those conditions. One of the other conditions usually is that they have to be monitored by someone who's independent, who's the prosecutors agree to monitor the internal operations of the company to ensure that, bribery and those kind of activities are prevented from happening again. So it lets the company off the hook, and then they don't get banned from bidding on World Bank contracts for 10 years.
Okay, so how does that apply to SNC-Lavalin, a large engineering firm in Montreal? Our government has come into a lot of hot water. Can you explain the scandal they're in and how this came about?
Sure. Well, what happened with SNC-Lavalin is they are already under a ban from the World Bank, a 10-year ban because of being involved in a bribery situation in Bangladesh. So then within Canada, the Conservative government under Prime Minister Harper, now about 9 years ago, put in a similar penalty, saying that if you were convicted of bribery, either within Canada or of a foreign government or a government official, then you would be banned from bidding on federal Canadian government contracts for 10 years. Well, then the SNC-Lavalin was charged back in 2016 for bribing Libya government officials. And the charges were continuing and they were moving towards a prosecution. And what the Canadian government did, first of all, was after heavy lobbying by SNC-Lavalin, slipped into the annual budget bill, a measure that has nothing to do with the budget, but was a change to our criminal code to allow for these deferred prosecution agreements where SNC-Lavalin could be let off the hook instead of prosecuted. What the Harper government had also done in 2007 was set up a more independent means of initiating and overseeing prosecutions in Canada. And the idea was to have a director of a public prosecution service and take away the attorney general, who was a politician and a member of the federal ruling party cabinet, from intervening and running prosecutions. And it's all to protect prosecutions from being tainted by political influence. And the British Columbia government as a province and Nova Scotia and provincial government and Quebec provincial governments also have these directors of public prosecutions, all for the same reason. What happened was the director of public prosecutions decided not to do a deferred prosecution negotiation agreement with SNC-Lavalin, decided to prosecute last September. And the Attorney General, under the law, can step in and still stop a prosecution, but has to do so in writing, so give written public notice And so that essentially has prevented the Attorney General from ever doing that since 2007, when the more independent Public Prosecution Service was set up. But the big problem was the Prime Minister's office and others in the Liberal cabinet started pressuring the former Attorney General to step in and protect SNC-Lavalin and override the Director of Public Prosecutions, and she refused to do so.
Right. She had a stunning testimony where she talked about all kinds of pressure from the PMO's office and different ministers. It's quite shocking. The government, the Prime Minister particularly this morning, and his ministers keep pivoting to this issue that they have a duty to protect 9,000 Canadian jobs. They would never interfere with a public, you know, the prosecutor. In their mind, they're just doing a public duty as a as an elected official to protect Canadian jobs and ordinary Canadians. Do you buy that argument? What do you think of the argument that they do have a duty to, in the public interest, to protect those jobs?
The problem is that this is just one of like seven or eight different spins that the Prime Minister's office has put on this. First of all, they said that the claims that there was pressure were false when the Globe and Mail reported them now about a month ago. And then that no one directed the former Attorney General to step in. And then they started saying only appropriate pressure was applied. No inappropriate pressure was applied. And the problem is there's a doctrine that comes out of Britain. It's part of the constitutional principles of that underlie our operations of government in Canada, and that is that the Attorney General makes these decisions, and no one is allowed to pressure the Attorney General. So there's no such thing as appropriate pressure. And they've kind of maintained this line that there was no inappropriate pressure, and it's really admitting wrongdoing, because no pressure is allowed. In other words, there's no such thing as appropriate pressure. And part of what they've been saying is essentially admitting wrongdoing, but at the same time saying, we were just trying to save these jobs. Well, there's two things that have come out from that with reporters digging into the situation. The first is the jobs really aren't an issue. SNC-Lavalin has to stay in Quebec until 2024 because they've taken out a huge loan from the pension fund in Quebec, and part of the condition was to stay in Quebec, so they can't leave the country. They have all sorts of work right through till 2026 doing current federal government contracts and also provincial government contracts. So those jobs would not disappear possibly till 2026. That's 7 years away, and lots of things could be done to change the penalty, for example, from the 10-year ban down to a 5-year or 3-year ban, and then they wouldn't really have any ban at all because they would have contracts right through to 2026 and then pick up new ones after that. So that whole bubble that the government's been blowing has really been deflated by some reporters looking into it and whether it's a valid claim. And they've essentially just proven it's not a valid claim. So their two big lines of defense have been that it was appropriate pressure, no pressure is allowed, it's illegal to pressure the Attorney General, and the jobs line. So they've kind of turned to a new one this morning with Prime Minister Trudeau's news conference, and what he said was there was an erosion of trust that he wasn't aware of. And it's just the latest spin. And the second latest spin is, it was just a misunderstanding. She thought right. It was pressure, but they were just actually just giving her information to consider.
Yeah, I watched that press conference. It's infuriating because Jody Wilson-Raybould's testimony was stunning. It was authentic and I believe believable by most Canadians who watched it. She was telling the truth.
There is one thing that is a valid criticism of her, which is the pressure is wrongdoing. Okay, it's not allowed. It violates the constitutional principle of the Attorney General's independence with regard to prosecutions. And she should have reported it last fall. And it's one of the things the Prime Minister's office has been saying, and it's true. She should have reported it last fall. And what it points to is that our attorneys general across the country are all members of the ruling party cabinet. They're politicians. And so, of course, their instinct, if someone tries to pressure them or do something else that's wrong in terms of their relationship with the Attorney General, would be to protect their party and protect their premier or at the federal level, the prime minister. And they're in a conflict of interest. They should be upholding the law and reporting publicly the wrongdoing to the authorities. But you have this conflict of interest of also wanting to remain in cabinet, protect your premier or prime minister, and protect your party. So it just shows that one of the systemic changes that should come out of this situation is that the Attorney General, who is the government's lawyer and advises the government on following the law, should just be a government lawyer. It should not be a politician, let alone a member of a cabinet.
Right. So you agree, like this morning the Prime Minister was saying that there was an issue with communications. Excuse me. We also heard that the Justice Committee, that she should have submitted her concerns in writing. So you follow that line of thought, that there was a communications problem, or just that she failed to submit?
I believe, and I think she showed substantial evidence that she did report it to the Prime Minister,
okay,
that pressure was going on, and tell others to stop pressuring her. But it was wrongdoing, and she should have reported that publicly, not just told them. They had violated the constitutional principle of independence, and also, by pressuring her, violated the Federal Conflict of Interest Act, which has a section in it, Section 9, that says you can't try to influence someone's decision to improperly further a person or organization's interests, or your own interests, or a business's interests. And it's improper to be trying to influence the Attorney General. And they were trying to further SNC-Lavalin's interest in not being prosecuted. And therefore, they were in clear violation by trying to influence the Attorney General, clear violation of Section 9 of the Conflict of Interest Act. She should have reported that to the Ethics Commissioner. She should have reported it to the RCMP, because several lawyers have come out and said this possibly crosses the line to being the crime of obstruction of justice. And she should have reported it publicly. And then everyone would have known about it last fall. The pressure would have stopped. But instead, she hid it. And it might have remained hidden if she had remained as Attorney General and Minister of Justice, because based on her own testimony, she felt miffed by being switched to Veterans Affairs and thought that the reason she was being switched was because she wouldn't step in and stop the prosecution of SNC-Lavalin. So it might have all remained hidden, and that's not proper either. It's the one wrong thing that she did in this situation.
Do you think, though, that if you're part of a corporation, or if you're part of the Attorney General, that she believed that her communications and telling them to stop would be enough, that she didn't imagine it would come to her getting demoted? Would that be a credible way?
Yeah, but it's still wrong.
Yeah.
Right? So as soon as the wrongdoing occurred, she should have reported it. And if she was just a government lawyer who had job security, right, because a cabinet minister can be dismissed by the prime minister at any time for any reason, and also it would have caused a crisis that would have likely led to her having to resign from cabinet. But if she was just a government
right.
lawyer who had job security, then she wouldn't have, I don't think, hesitated to report it publicly, because she wouldn't have any possibility of losing her job, and she wouldn't be hurting her political party or her prime minister. So I don't think she actually reported it to the Globe. I think it was probably others who worked for her who reported it and were quite miffed that she had been removed from the justice position. We don't know exactly who reported it to the Globe. But again, the thing is, remove the conflict by removing the Attorney General from cabinet and from the ruling party. Have it be a government lawyer who's not a politician and not a member of cabinet. And if that we had had that situation, likely the pressure wouldn't have even been applied, but if it had been, it would have been reported publicly, and this would have all been out in the open several months ago.
Okay, I want to get into Gerald Butts. He was the chief of staff for the prime minister, very close friend, and a couple of comments that he made I want you to touch on. One was that he said, I quote, Jody Wilson-Raybould's behavior was inconsistent with the idea that her mind was made up, and she simply had to inform the PMO that this was the case. And the second quote was that he just learned a few days ago for the first time that Jody Wilson-Raybould had even made a final decision, and she never spoke up until she was demoted, so this might be some kind of sour grape. So what are your thoughts on those comments?
Yeah, it's another couple of the versions of spin that the Prime Minister's office and others have been putting on this. With regard to the first one, it's hard to tell from Jody Wilson-Raybould's testimony whether she has written records of someone emailing her or texting her and saying, you have to do this, we have to save these jobs, the only solution is interference. She referred to a couple of emails and texts, but it was unclear, even from the questioning, whether those were texts directly from people like Gerald Butts and others, or were they texts from her staff person after meeting with those people. So we need a full investigation, and we need all the written records looked at. And what the Justice Committee did yesterday, the Liberal MPs, who hold a majority of seats on the Justice Committee, what they did was the opposition put forward two motions. One was all the written records be disclosed to the committee. And two, that Jody Wilson-Raybould be called back to respond to what Gerald Butts said. And the Liberal MPs voted against both of those motions. Now, if you want to get to the bottom of the situation and to the truth, you don't vote against both of those motions. So it's very suspicious that they would do that. All the written records have to be looked at. There is one person who can do it, for sure, and has to, and that's the Ethics Commissioner, who is investigating a complaint that Democracy Watch filed on February 8th about the violations of Section 9. And a couple of days ago, we sent the Ethics Commissioner a follow-up letter saying expand the investigation to look at the actions and communications of all 11 people that Jody Wilson-Raybould named in her testimony last week. And then possibly Andrew Scheer, the Conservative Party leader, has filed a complaint with the RCMP, and if they decide to investigate, they have full powers to subpoena and get all of that evidence and all those written records. And all of that has to be looked at to determine the truth of it. No matter what, the Prime Minister's office officials, the Prime Minister himself, they're saying, and the clerk of the Privy Council, Michael Wernick, all these people, are saying, yes, she was pressured, but it was appropriate pressure. And what they don't seem to realize is there is no such thing as appropriate pressure. It is against the constitutional principle. No pressure is allowed. So they kind of have admitted wrongdoing, however they try to spin it, because it's wrong to pressure her.
Right. Now, I totally agree that we need more than this Justice Committee, because it's stacked with liberals, and all the reporting we're getting now from CBC and others is it's just, oh, it's a he said, it's a she said scenario. And the NDP is calling for public inquiry. The Conservatives are calling for RCMP investigations. We've spoken the past stuff, and you said the Ethics Commissioner is kind of weak on accusing the government. So do you still have faith in the Ethics Commissioner?
No. To clarify, Democracy Watch filed a complaint with the Ethics Commissioner and then an expanded complaint a couple of days ago. But our position is the Ethics Commissioner himself, his name is Mario Dion, should not investigate this situation. He shouldn't investigate anything to do with the Liberals, because he was handpicked by the Trudeau Liberals through a very suspicious and secretive process, during which that process of choosing the Ethics Commissioner, the Trudeau cabinet Prime Minister actually lied to opposition party leaders. The Trudeau cabinet sent out a letter that said, we can't find anyone qualified. This was in July of 2017. Can't find anyone qualified. We've got to open up the search process again and keep looking. When in fact, Democracy Watch did some digging, and through the Access to Information Act, we found government documents that show that they actually had qualified candidates in the spring of 2017. And obviously they just didn't want any of those people. They were likely real watchdogs. So they went through the charade for another 6 months, and in December of 2017, with just a few days' notice to the opposition parties, they said, we found the person, it's the only person we've been able to find, and his name's Mario Dion. So very suspicious, very secretive process. It was all controlled by the cabinet. And they choose this guy, Mario Dion, who used to be integrity commissioner at the federal level. And when he was integrity commissioner, which is a position to protect whistleblowers, he was found guilty twice by the federal court of violating whistleblower rights. He also buried 140 complaints that whistleblowers filed without examining them fully. And he also did a couple of other unethical things. And this is the guy who's now ethics commissioner.
Jesus.
So we think he's tainted with bias because of how he was chosen by the Trudeau cabinet. And we also know for sure that he has a very bad past record of enforcement when he was integrity commissioner. And that's why we're calling on him to refer the investigation to a provincial ethics commissioner who is totally independent from all the federal political parties.
Now, if the government, I've heard they've been questionable, their numbers on jobs, would it cost that many jobs? And it seems that SNC has quite a few contracts. And also there's this idea that They're the only company in the country that could do engineering work. Those employees could be absorbed by other agencies, I'm sure.
Yes.
So what is it then about SNC that the Liberals are going out above and beyond to kind of save them from getting criminal courts? What is the reasoning behind SNC and the Liberal Party of Canada?
It's hard to know exactly, but people have also pointed out that there's been lots of layoffs and jobs lost in Alberta with the oil and gas companies, and the Liberals have done very little to help those companies stay alive. And our reasons not to, if you're concerned about climate change, of course, but it's just inconsistent. SNC-Lavalin, though, a lot of the jobs are based in Quebec, and SNC-Lavalin also has a long history of donating mostly to the Liberal Party compared to the other federal political parties. And Quebec has a lot of seats, a lot more seats than Alberta does. You can't win a majority government unless you win enough seats in Quebec. But you can win a majority government without winning one seat in Alberta. So I think that's really the difference, is that it was political considerations. And the government was trying to protect this Quebec company to try and win the votes of Quebecers in the next election, because there's so many seats, so many politicians are elected within Quebec, 75 of them, compared to just a couple of dozen in Alberta.
Right.
So I think that's really what it comes down to, and Jody Wilson-Raybould testified to that. She talked about how the pressure was really about the politics and not about the jobs.
Do you support deferred prosecution agreements? Would you do away with them, or what's your thoughts on those?
Yeah, I think what the Conservatives did was a bit too blunt. An automatic 10-year ban, no matter what the prosecution's about, no matter what the situation is, it should be a sliding scale. If the company cooperates totally in outing and reporting and helping with the prosecutions of executives and employees that might have been involved in bribery, if the company fires all those people, changes its board, agrees to an independent audit regularly by a fully independent person that the government appoints, not the company, and cleans up its internal ethics enforcement system and does all of those things, then the company could win a ban of just a few years. If the company didn't cooperate and didn't agree to those other things, then the ban would go up. Or if there was a long pattern of bribery within the company in all sorts of countries or within Canada, then the company would face the maximum of 10 years. But it shouldn't have been 10 years no matter what the situation. There should be some discretion allowed by prosecutors, not by any politician, but by prosecutors, to negotiate exactly what the deal is, as there is with other crimes, right? They look at all sorts of different factors in terms of the harm that's been done and the record of the person, and that's done all the time in terms of plea deals, in terms of how many years someone will get. Is it their first offense or their 10th offense? All those things are usually looked at. And so you can't let the company off the hook. You should never have a possibility of zero penalty, but it shouldn't always, in every single case, be 10 years.
Right. Now, we have a situation now where the government is not admitting any wrongdoing. They're not apologizing, which tells me that this behavior, these kinds of things, will just continue, which makes many, many Canadians very cynical, the kind of cliche that all politicians are corrupt. What would be the best case scenario for Canada to put an end to this kind of cronyism, to this kind of insider access? What would be the best scenario going forward, do you think?
Well, multiple changes have to be done. I mean, first of all, we need this independently investigated. The RCMP is, at least the commissioner of the RCMP, is more independent from the government than ever before, really, because the new RCMP commissioner was selected by the Liberals in a totally different way than they selected the ethics commissioner. A committee made up of 7 of the 10 members on the committee were not members of the government or cabinet and not under control of the government or cabinet in any way. And that committee of 10 people selected the new RCMP commissioner.
Mm-hmm.
So why they didn't select the ethics commissioner in the same way is a big question. So the RCMP should investigate, the ethics commissioner should refer it to someone who is not tainted by having been handpicked by the Trudeau cabinet. That's the first step. We need the political donation limit lowered in Canada. It's currently $1,600 per person, and it's pretty easy for a company's executives and their spouses and kids to each give the maximum. You have 10 executives and their spouses give, and all of a sudden the company's giving $32,000 to a political party, which is a lot of money still. In Quebec, when they had the corruption scandal, they lowered the donation limit to $100. And actually, if you give more than $50 in Quebec, you have to give it to the election agency, Elections Quebec, who verifies that it's your money before they pass it on to the party. And the reason they did that is, even when you have a $100 donation limit, if some company has 100 employees, they can walk into the party headquarters and say, here are 100 checks, and they come from my employees. And boom, they give $10,000. And the party, you know, if the party's corrupt, the party will take the money because they want it and cover up the fact that this person probably wrote all the checks themselves. So that's how far they've gone in Quebec, and we need the same thing at the federal level. We need penalties for violating the federal ethics law. Even if the ethics commissioner finds the prime minister and others guilty in this case, the only penalty is a report that says they're guilty. That's not enough of a penalty to discourage unethical behavior. And we need, you know, they should face a fine of like 1 year's salary, because this is a fundamental law, the federal ethics law. It really protects our democracy. All the rules in it are aimed at stopping politicians from helping themselves and their family members and their friends and their political party supporters. And if those things aren't stopped, you have a government that's just helping itself instead of protecting the public interest. So we need multiple changes. The Lobbying Act needs to be strengthened as well. SNC-Lavalin was heavily lobbying on this. Secret lobbying is allowed. Unethical lobbying is allowed. They might have helped the Liberals get elected last time, and we wouldn't even know it because of the loopholes in the Lobbying Act.
Wow.
And so all these things need to be cleaned up to prevent this stuff. And every single party at the federal level has known this for the last 20 years, because Democracy Watch 20 years ago appeared before a whole bunch of committees and laid out all the changes needed to have an actual democratic, honest, ethical, open, representative, and waste-preventing federal government. And none of the parties have made it a priority to clean those things up. So hopefully one of them now will react to this and finally make the promises needed to clean it up and win some support from voters enough to really influence change after the next election.
This could lead to really long-lasting positive changes when we see how kind of rotten this system
possible.
Is.
You know, voters vote for a lot of reasons. But one of the big hits against the Liberals are that Trudeau has really shattered the trust. He's shown that he offered false hope in 2015 of open and honest government, which was one of the main planks in their platform. And it's really hard to win that trust back. So it gives an opportunity to the opposition parties to step in. But if they just complain and say, vote for us, we'll be better, without showing how they will be better, they won't win a swing of support, because people won't believe them, especially with the conservatives. You know, they have a 10-year record where they did many of the same kind of things. So it's not very convincing for them to say, we'll be better than the Liberals, because people haven't forgotten the Harper years.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for spending a few moments with me. We've come to the end of our time here. How can people access your work and follow these issues and be in touch with you?
The best thing is to sign up for and join the Democracy Watcher Network at democracywatch.ca.
Thank you again. We've come to the end of our show, Latin Waves. Latin Waves is an internationally syndicated weekly program made available through campus and community stations and available out to the world at www.latinwavesmedia.com.